Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Happy basketball season, and absolutely nothing else has happened this week.
Not a thing.
Not a damn thing. Just basketball season.
Just basketball season. All right. Dan, I figure we start off a little with, you know, what happened for Syracuse on Tuesday night. And only Syracuse, they had their second exhibition game of the season against crosstown, quote-unquote, rival Lemoyne. They won big. What were your kind of immediate reactions, assuming you probably either caught a little bit or spent a lot of time with the box score afterwards?
I had the game on. There were other things that were drawing my attention away. But I would say that it was, after a sloppy start, a pretty good performance for Syracuse that would make you feel good about the future of Syracuse over the next year or so.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a fair point. I know we're just making veiled references to something else.
Who knows?
Could be anything, really. It's my bowling game. One thing I did notice, if you want to look at, you know, the Indiana Pennsylvania game versus the Lemoyne game, was obviously the uptick in three-point shots. In particular, in the first half, I feel like, you know, shooting didn't really look great. In the IUP game to start, I know they shot 4 for 12 from 3 in the first half in that first game. On Tuesday night, they were 7 for 14. A lot of that was led by Andrew White III, who really had a nice shooting game, scoring 24 points, including 6 threes. I think the three is going to be a big part of the offense. I know it was last year. What a lot of people were very curious about is who was going to hit those. I think it's going to end up being two newcomers for the most part in White and Tyus Battle. I think that Lydon can hit threes. I think he's somebody who doesn't necessarily create his own, however, and I feel like without Malachi Richardson, at least early on, you know, opposing defenses are going to be keying in on him until they figure out what some of these other guys can do. The scouting reports are just going to be very limited, especially on a guy like Battle, who, you know, all of his game tape is going to be from high school in these couple exhibition games. But Dan, did you see something similar? The kind of the three ball seemed to be guiding the way. Obviously, in general, they shot the ball pretty well in both games.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big part of the team again. I think this team is probably a little better equipped to shoot the ball, or at least spread the ball around a little bit more. Obviously, White looks like he'll be... I don't think he'll take 10 threes a game, but, you know, he's a guy who can have that kind of volume if you need him to. And he's definitely a candidate to lead this team in scoring. Obviously, Battle, I don't remember him... The three-point, like, it was definitely a thing he could do, but it wasn't, like...
The feature of his game?
Yeah, it was. I mean, he's more of, like, a creator and a rangy guy who can get to the hoop. But if he, you know, if he's going to knock down like mid 30% of his shots, he had 2 for 5 last night. That's
he was
really
4 for 5 in the first game. He's at 6 threes in 2 exhibition games.
Yeah, if he's shooting like 35 to 40% with his range and with some of the other guys on the floor, I mean that's going to do wonders in spacing the floor. Because I know a lot of you know, heading into the season, we figured that was going to be more John Gillen's role, and obviously Lydon playing his, you know, his role. Obviously, he's not going to probably take quite as many as the guards, but he obviously can knock them down, after, as we've learned last year. Even Frank Howard was not too afraid to take them last night. It went 1 for 3. I don't think that's going to be a big thing for him, but I think he needs to be able to hit that shot just so defenses can't totally sag off him. I think there's a number of capable shooters. If Battle's even better than we anticipated, it's going to be big. And if White can be that kind of go-to guy, not unlike what Malachi or what Benajay was last year, shooting around 40%. I think that's a really nice team makeup. And obviously the three ball continues to be a bigger and bigger part of this offense, which I'm fine with, because that's the way the game is going.
Agreed. So getting away from shooting a little bit, it seemed like versus Indiana, Pennsylvania, there was a lot of kind of team basketball being played, especially when the team found itself down early on and then made a furious comeback and made short work of the Hawks, or whatever kind of Hawk they were at IUP. In the second game, it seems like a lot of people were doing more shot creation for themselves. I mean, Frank Howard was the only player to log more than 2 assists. In general, the team only had 14 on the game against Lemoyne versus 21 against IUP. Do you think, Dan, that that's a product of his caliber of opponent, where it's easier to create your own shot against Lemoyne, or maybe it's more comfort in the system, or perhaps are we looking at a little bit of an identity crisis with distributors? Maybe I saw Gillen seemed to be the primary distributor in game one, and obviously was helped out a bit by White. Actually, Lydon ended up logging three in the first game, but then the second game, again, Howard had seven, and the next closest was two by Gillen. So do you see this being something to watch, maybe, that distributors might be hard to come by in some games?
Yeah, I think especially early in the year. Obviously, we don't have, big games every night, but I think this team is still kind of finding itself, and that's what you get when you have, two transfers and a couple of high-impact freshmen, and then obviously Chukwu, who is still finding his way, and offensively, I don't expect him to be a huge factor this year. But yeah, I think it's going to take a little bit for them to really gel, and you can't expect every team to have the ball movement of like the 09-10 team, which obviously everyone played with each other for a while and knew each other inside and out. This team, these guys haven't played with each other. I mean, the only, huge offensive players that return this year from last year's team are Lydon. I mean, Roberson is, an offensive factor every once in a while. Pullman, was in and out last year, and Howard was limited last year. So it's not like we have about half the rotation is brand new, and the other half, they all played very sporadic minutes, and that's not really even a group that probably played a lot together last season. So I think it's a work in progress. I think Frank Howard was really good last night from what I saw. I do want to watch that game through again, with a closer eye. But I saw a lot of the Twitter reaction where Frank was impressing a lot of people. And if he and Gillen, I think we have two capable point guards. If they can kind of split that duty, and it might even be a case of like one guy matches up better than certain teams than others because they are kind of pretty different players. But I really like the makeup of the team. I think it might take a couple of weeks, but I think by midseason, this will be a fun group to watch.
Yeah, I have to agree there. I think, we heard a lot of hype around campus and around, just some SU circles in general. I know some outsiders started weighing in that Frank Howard could be in for a breakout this year. If you're telling me he's going to get 11 and 7 every night and hit a three, grab a couple boards, I'm totally fine with that. I think, yeah, like you said, between him and Gillen, pretty efficient shooting overall. I think 11 to 21 between the two of them. 2 for 7 from three, which, whatever. Doesn't really matter with the opponent. But, yeah, I think the fact that the two of them are... If the two of them can distribute a little bit more and shoot similarly to the way they did against Lemoyne, I'm not really too worried about the point guard position. Looking at some other individual players, I know we mentioned Lydon a little bit. He hasn't shot particularly well in the preseason. It was 5 for 10 in the first game, but 0 for 4 from 3. And then the second game is 3 for 9 and 0 for 4 for 3, from 3 once again, but 10 boards in each. Dan, what do you think is Tyler Lydon's ceiling this year, keeping in mind that he's going to kind of walk into this season, unlike last year, with a target on his back?
I expect pretty big things. I don't think he's going to be some breakout 20-point-a-game guy, but I think maybe even a lesser team he would be. But I think he's going to fit in well. He's a really nice chemistry player. He doesn't dominate the ball at all. He takes good shots. He obviously does a lot on both ends of the ball, where he's a solid rebounder, a really good shot blocker. I'm expecting a solid 15 and 7, 15 and 8. Obviously, he's going to be one of the focal points of the team, but I think it's going to be one of those classic Syracuse teams where you don't see one guy really dominating the stat book. We always say the 09-10 and then the 11-12 teams, but none of those teams had, Wes Johnson had 16 points a game. Right. You didn't have a ton of guys. You didn't have 20-point scorers. You had a lot of guys.
You could score in double digits.
Yeah, you had a lot of guys hovering around 11 or 12, and on any given night, one of them would drop 23 on you. And I kind of think that's what this team will look like. I think more often than not, it'll be Lydon or White. Maybe Gillen explodes for 20 once in a while when he hits, three or four threes in a game. But I think this will be a pretty balanced team. I think Lydon probably will be, the guy who fills the stat book the most, because he can go get you, a 17-10 three-block game. But like you said, he's also going to be at the focal point, where last year, obviously he had some huge games down the stretch, but he was, he had Malachi and Benajay on the team, who were both the focuses of the defense, and that allowed him to kind of find his spots and dead open shots. But I still think this team has enough weapons where, you know, even if he is more of a focal point, it's not like he's going to be, you know, hounded the whole time. I think, you know, teams are going to be forced to respect White and Dillon and the rest of the guys in this slot, especially, you know, if Roberson comes along, obviously that changes everything. But yeah, I think he'll fit in well, and I'm not worried about him at all. I think he's just too good of a chemistry fit, and he just plays a smart game. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in the regular season, starting in a couple days.
In a couple days, Friday. Dan, I know we talked about, like, last year, I know, because we were discussing line a little bit, we talked about with him and a couple other guys that maybe overuse was an issue. And I think, you know, what you said there was good in terms of distributing the ball more. And I think you're going to see the scoring load kind of, you know, even out a little bit. I mean, Cooney had a couple games where he was great. But otherwise, last year, you were pretty much relying on a Benajay or Malachi game for anything to happen. Lydon had a couple games, obviously, in the beginning of the year and then was key down the stretch. But by and large, is not going to be your leading scorer on a night-to-night basis. Again, I'd like to see the three-point percentage go up. 0-for-8 in the preseason isn't great, but overall, the fact that he hit all of his free throws, he wasn't an awful shooter by any means, and he was cleaning up on the boards. I'd say Lydon, you know, is a good candidate to be in that, like you said, maybe that 15-8 range. You know, last year, he was giving us in 30 minutes 10-6. I think I'd like to see him play closer to like 27 this year, but I think in 27 minutes he can probably give us 14-8, 15-8. And I think that that's going to be, you know, testament to this entire offense. It's going to be more efficiency. Again, like this is a team. I know you mentioned kind of the 09-10 team, who I think could really run really well. And I don't know about this group just yet. And, you know, the 11-12 team that I think really couldn't run a ton but played really good defense. And had the ability to score. I almost see this as kind of like a bizarro world 13-14 team where you didn't know who was going to be the hero, but somebody was going to be able to pull it off. I think that team was entirely based on defense, and then, like you said, that random clutch shooting performance by whether it was Cooney or Ennis or anyone else. This team, on the other hand, might struggle a little bit on the defensive end and then have a bevy of heroes to choose from should it need it, and what will probably be more high-scoring games this year than we've seen in the past few.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that. As much as I enjoyed, you know, moments from that 2014 season, like, some of those games are really tough to watch, and then obviously the year after with, you know, the Rack and Company show wasn't the prettiest basketball. Last year we came along a little bit in that regard, but this should be, I think, the highest-scoring team probably since the 2012 team. Because even 2013, like, that team could score on you with the MCW and Sutherland.
But didn't do so all that frequently.
But didn't do that often, and then they were fine, you know, driving the pace down and then just absolutely locking you up. This team, I think, just because, you know, same thing with kind of the chemistry and the, you know, ball movement, I think it's going to take a little while for some of these guys to learn the zone. You don't have six guys who know exactly what they're doing. You have a handful. If that, you have three or four that really understand the defense. So I think, A, that, you know, who knows how much man-to-man we see during the regular season, but it seems to be on the table. I don't know how much they played last night. But you also are going to probably have more games where, that, you know, you're not just not getting those stops after stops, and you're going to have to store the ball. So, yeah, it's an interesting team. You don't usually see Syracuse teams where you have such major overhaul on year-to-year basis but still have these expectations. So I think we are in kind of uncharted territory, but I think most of us are up for it and pretty excited about it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you know what, it's a perfect segue there into the defense a little bit. Obviously man-to-man has been mentioned and utilized in the preseason. We said this, you know, during, I think it was either last week's or the week before, I think it was last week's podcast, talking about, you know, the reasons for man-to-man and why Jim Boeheim might want to go to a little bit more, because you have so few players who've used the zone, you know, in a game situation. But yeah, I think people need to get used to not seeing the teams that we've seen in the past few years. You're not going to see the 12-13 team that literally just ground teams into the floor. I mean, you look at that Elite Eight game against Marquette as case in point. And then the few years since then as well. I know last year, I think we started to see some glimmers of what we might see this year, which is the press. You know, I think Jim Boeheim's always been defined by consistency. But the thing that really got us to that final surprise Final Four bid last year, in part, was, you know, the press and a change in the tempo and a change in the blueprint. The teams just weren't ready for. You look at a team like Virginia that was, you know, senior heavy, a veteran group that'd been to the tournament a few times already. Were taken by surprise, suffocated by it very quickly. I think with a more athletic team, I think with a quicker team, maybe even smaller team this year, depending on the lineup. I mean, you can really go big or small with this lineup, which is another great asset. I think we could see a little bit of that if the going gets tough at the end of a few games.
Yeah, and that's really my the biggest intrigue of this team for me is the rotations, both offensively, where you have a lot of different possible lineup combinations, and you could get, you know, three or four shooters on the floor at all times. But defensively, too, you have the ability to put a Leiden and a Chukwu back there, where you have two legit shot blockers. Obviously, Chukwu's like 7'3", so he's going to be like a rare thing for any team to see. But then you can also get into, you know, races, because you have so many guys who can play, or you have at least, you know, White and Battle, who can both play at the top of the zone or on the wing. Who knows how comfortable they'll be doing both, but you definitely have that ability. So I am interested to see, obviously, how much man we play, if at all, because I do think that if they really wanted to, that could be a thing they do. I don't know how effective it'll be based on what I saw in the first game, but also just being able to adjust to different paces and different playing styles and the different lineups that you see. I think this is definitely more... I'm interested to see how much Boeheim commits to changing up the rotations and playing more than his normal, like, 7.5 men. I think if he's ever going to do it, it'll be with this team, and it seems like he's more open to it than he's been in a long time.
Yeah, and I clearly agree there, and I think it's almost essential to, you know, this team's survival. I think a lot of people have been very high on SU. Anyone who mentions them as a dark horse Final Four contender or a national title contender have all said, you know, either added a caveat with the defense or just added a caveat in general about these pieces gelling together. Like you said, Boeheim seems more willing to change than normal. We'll see. I do think and hope that Hopkins is going to be a little more involved. Obviously, it's still Jim's team, but I would think that Hopkins would be a little bit more involved in the rotations and maybe some of the in-game decisions, because while he got some experience in that regard last year, having Jim next year there to help talk through some of those calls, obviously a huge asset that most coaches would kind of kill for. And then on the job training, I think that, you know, there could be some growing pains here, and I'd rather see them kind of worked out. The non-conference, obviously we have a couple tough games. Georgetown should be a little bit tougher. Wisconsin is going to be very difficult on the road. So those games aren't the ones that you're going to see a lot of dice rolling. But against some of these lesser opponents that SU faces, you're definitely going to see some changes. You're going to see stuff like Leiden at the three, which he didn't play a ton of last year. You'll definitely see some mix-ups with big lineups. You'll see how different players play together. We could end up with two point guards on the floor at different times. I'm excited about it. I think, you know, this is one of the first times in a while where, we can sit here and say, like, I'm not sure the five that are going to be on the floor at all times, but I know that the team is going to be able to plug in different guys at all times to different lineup formulations to make this thing work eventually.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be shocked if this is like a team where people are kind of frustrated in the beginning. We might, you know, take one of those early losses that, you know, for a long time with teams that we never had. Now, pretty much every year, I feel like we have one loss that people, you know, go nuts over, warranted or not. So that might happen. But I think by midseason, I'm very excited. I remain incredibly optimistic, and I actually kind of appreciate that Syracuse seems to be flying way farther under the radar than I probably thought heading into the year. I thought there would be a little bit more buzz, and there's some, but not nearly as much as I thought, considering
thanks,
all the
Duke.
Pieces here. Yeah, Duke, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
With all your freshmen, even though two of them are hurt.
Which, that's not good. We'll get to the ACC in a little bit. A couple other folks I wanted to talk about. We'll get to the big men in a few, but we mentioned him a little bit in the beginning, Andrew White. White was known as a scorer coming in. I think he did a really great job of that at Nebraska. But what we've seen from him in these first two games, it kind of echoes something I know that some SU folks have said during training camp. I know John Rothstein said it from CBS when he did his annual like Syracuse info dump when he went up to campus. And that was the
so much
info.
So much someone and other player.
But it was always Demetrius Nichols, and you know what? He's not wrong. Dan, I know Demetrius is kind of before your time.
Yes, he is. I mean, I know of actually fun. I think Demetrius Nichols. I think the first weekend I was at Syracuse, we went out and we were like on Marshall Street, probably like 2 a.m. And Demetrius Nichols and Terrence Roberts popped out of Insomnia Cookies, and they were both clearly hammered. And my roommate, who was a lifelong SU fan, unlike me, was like freaked out because they both like turned the corner and we like almost bumped into them. And he like lost his shit, and yeah, so I knew who that was pretty quick. Good times as a freshman at Syracuse.
Fair enough. Demetrius Nichols was the leading scorer on the freshman year team when I was at SU. He scored 39 points against St. John's once. That was awesome to watch. There was maybe one St. John's fan in the entire dome. They were heckled. He was the only player who could really score on that team consistently. Devo was on that team. Some other guys were on that. Roberts, Watkins, a few others. But that team really needed Nichols to score. That isn't the case with White, and that's what has me so excited about him, is that Nichols really needed to kind of take the weight of the world on his shoulders there. And he was an elite scorer. He's actually one of the – I mean, that last season, too, he's one of the more prolific scorers, single-season scorers in SU history. But, you know, he could be erratic. He definitely had to do it all for that team when it came to, carrying the load there. So I see the comparisons, but I do think that White seems to be a little more of a steady shooter, more consistent. His confidence, doesn't lack for anything. I think minutes-wise, he'll get limited enough that he's not going to... start knocking on the door of 20 points per game. But, I think it's realistic to see someone scoring 18 points a game or so, and that'll probably get you top five or around there in the ACC, which is great.
Yeah, I think 17 or 18 is probably about right. I think he and Battle could actually have, they're not like a total, mirror image of, but I think numbers-wise, it wouldn't shock me to see him and Battle put up similar dual numbers to Benajay and Malachi. Probably not the same assist totals for Benajay, because Benajay was running the point, obviously, and that would actually be Battle that would be running the point if either of them does with any time. But we obviously have two more pure point guards, so I think scoring wise it wouldn't shock me if those guys combined for 31, 32 a game.
I would absolutely take that. Would also mean that Ty's Battle is definitely gone to the NBA. Which, again, Syracuse fans, do not wish ill upon Syracuse players that leave early. That means that we did a good job pretty much without fail. There are exceptions there, of course, and even if Syracuse did not have a great season coinciding with a player leaving early, they're an adult. It's their decision to go to the NBA. They might have a responsibility to their family or their kids or whoever it may be. Can't judge anyone for wanting a shot at the NBA, especially if you have a guaranteed first-round selection.
Yep, I feel like we need to just build a sign somewhere and just put that up.
Yeah, that's fine.
Eventually we'll get it. Eventually people will understand that is the reality. But, until that point, we will continue to harp on it even before the first game of the season is played.
Too true.
Yes, Battle could very well be an NBA player. I would put it at about – I'd probably put it at 60-40 that he goes, to be honest.
That's fair.
And that might be low.
No, and people need to be realistic about this. If you want the accolades of being a perennial top 10, 15 team, if you want to be a national title contender year in and year out, if you want top 5, top 10 recruiting classes, this is how it works now. We recruit, I think, until recently, we were recruiting about an equal measure 4-year guys and one and done guys. I think we've tipped the scales a little bit there and maybe too far in the one and done, but we're not getting one and done guys who can't contribute in their time at SU. I think you look at a guy like Lydon that could have been one and done potentially. Richardson obviously was one and done. I think Battle's a guy that even if he does go one and done, is going to be a very productive player. I think that that's also causing a lot of the roster turnover, and that's why we are kind of looking, you know, over the edge of a cliff right now with a 2017 class that needs to be big and has not yielded anybody yet. But at the same time, like, again, fans need to adjust expectations. They've adjusted expectations in terms of what they want to see at the end of the season, but they still haven't adjusted expectations in terms of what the NBA and its scouts see in Orange players. I think there's, what, 12 players from SU currently in the NBA? I mean, that's a high watermark by far.
Yeah, especially because, like, while people have knocked, like, the output of NBA players coming from Syracuse, like, there aren't that Kentucky is it's its own thing. Like, Kentucky has so many more guys right now than everyone else. Duke is kind of catching up, but, like, Duke hasn't put, like, a bona fide superstar in yet. There are a couple guys that might become that, but beyond those two, like, you don't have that many teams putting in a guy or two every single year. Syracuse is probably in the next that next run, and just because none of them have become, like, superstars yet, like, doesn't mean that one won't. And it's not like there's a college that is putting out, like, 2 and 3 year players where there's, like, 3 or 4 all-stars, you know, from that group. It's Kentucky and then, to a lesser extent, maybe Duke is developing into it, are, like, the only schools where you can say consistently that there are going to be NBA stars entering the league every year, every other year. So the fact that Syracuse doesn't have 3 or 4 all-stars, like, isn't really a referendum on Syracuse. It's just, you know, the rest of the all-stars in the NBA are kind of spread between a number of different schools, like, and especially when you have, like, guys like Dame Lillard coming from small school ball, like, it's all over the place. But Paul George coming from where'd he go? Fresno State, like,
Steph.
It's, yeah, obviously Steph coming from Davidson, like, it's so all over the place beyond mostly the Kentucky guys, which are, like, their own thing because that's how Calipari runs the system, that it's hard to really get worked up over it. And I get, like, why, you know, you take the bait from, like, UConn people, but, like, UConn's not putting in even as many, I mean, maybe the same, but probably fewer guys in the NBA. Maybe they've had one or two that have done slightly better than, like, the recent Syracuse guys, but it's not like they're blowing people out of the water. So I think Syracuse fans almost take the bait a little bit too much with that. But I think if there were fewer players coming out of Syracuse, the argument would actually be, like, weaker, and that's weird and dumb. Like, just because there have been, like, consistently one or two guys every year and none of them have exploded doesn't mean, like, they're not doing a good job, because generally players will tell you, like, help me get into the NBA, but then they're going to believe in themselves to do it. From there, that's kind of the Kentucky thing. Like, they, you know, they know that playing for Cal, they'll have, you know, a ton of exposure, and he knows how to get them into the league. After that, it's, like, up to them.
Right. And, yeah, you look up and down Syracuse's schedule. I mean, they're on television, like, 20-some-odd times yet again. Boeheim, but now is a proven track record of getting a lot of players into the NBA. Again, you could debate how well they do once they get there, but that doesn't matter. If your ultimate goal is to get to the NBA, it's not Boeheim's responsibility or job to make you an all-star. It's the players and his, you know, the pro coach, once he gets there, to help him develop into that. I know you mentioned the draft stuff. I don't have the article up in front of me, but I remember the one I put up around the draft this year. It was SU's one of only 5 schools to have somebody drafted in the first round of each of the last 5 years. And the other schools in that list, the two you mentioned, Kentucky and Duke, plus North Carolina and Kansas.
So,
I mean, to be in that company is great. I know we're either 4th or 5th on that list in terms of overall players drafted, which, again, pretty great. This is not a bad time to be an Orange fan by far. If we need to tell you that, then this must be your first listen.
Yeah. And even guys who haven't, like, turned into superstars, obviously Wes Johnson was drafted very early and he hasn't, you know, panned out in terms of, you know, he's not an all-star, but Wes Johnson's been playing in the NBA for like 12 years. Like, that's pretty good. You will sign for that, I think.
He's actually become like the new age Hakeem Warrick of that, almost that exact same kind of position. I mean, a little bit, he's definitely not as big as Warrick was. And I think that Warrick was a better defender and, you know, was more of a force on the boards. But, you know, Johnson's become a little bit of this 3-and-D type guy who, you know, you can make a great living doing that, especially in the current NBA salary environment.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing 8 years in the NBA, especially in the next, you know, if your career's starting in the next, like, 2, you're going to make a lot of money. And, you know, whether or not I don't think you becoming an all-star is because you went or not is because you went to play for Jim Boeheim, but you will get, like you said, on TV 25. I mean, with the tournament, like upwards of 30 times a year, and plenty of people will see you play. And you will, I mean, look at Tyler Lydon. He was mostly, I wouldn't say an unknown. He was like a four-star recruit, but he wasn't a blue chip guy that everyone was talking about entering the year. And he was very much on like the first round radar this spring. And he is on the first round radar for pretty much everybody heading into this season. So clearly the Syracuse program is working out for the guys that come through it.
Yeah. I mean, look, Malachi played himself into the first round.
Yep.
Last year, just by way of just the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, like Malachi was a five-star guy. We all thought he'd be very good. I don't think we thought he was as automatic a one-and-done as, like, Battle this year. But there was a shot, and then he exploded in the biggest stage and dominated Malcolm Brogdon in a hugely notable game. And next thing you know, he's going to be, you know, a mid-to-late first-round pick. And, you know, he's unfortunately on the Sacramento Kings, which is its own issue, but... you know, that wasn't his decision, and he's getting paid first round money, so that's pretty solid, and he has as good a chance to make it as anyone else.
I would concur. Dan, we're gonna do a little halftime before we get to the big men, and then we can go on to some of our other programming here. What have you been drinking for the past week?
I actually didn't drink anything yesterday, which should surprise some people for a number of reasons, but I really wanted to. I wasn't doing a ton of beer, but the one thing, we went out on Friday to a beer house in Astoria, or at One Island City, I guess, technically, in Queens, and they had, you know, those, like, giant 32-ounce pints, so I had two of those, and both were the Billy Halfstack IPA from Single Cut, which is, you know, a solid go-to. Obviously, when you're in Queens, you can probably find it pretty much everywhere, so really enjoyed that. Not, like, the most bold Single Cut, but... you know, that's one of the more common ones, and very super good IPA. No complaints there. And then also had a couple of Allagash Whites, which another one that you can find pretty steadily at any decent beer place, but a really good standby. So nothing too fancy, but some solid ones that are always welcome.
Good times. A couple things I had is down in Long Beach at a restaurant I hadn't been to. Grabbed from Phantom Carriage. It was a wild ale. It's a Moise. It was all right. Local brew, though, so I always like to support where possible. Also had a 1903 lager from Craftsman Brewing up in Pasadena. Had a couple of Ninja vs. Unicorns and Pipeworks to finish off those that I had. Had a Ruminator from the brewery. It was a barrel-aged Doppelbach. Very, very good. Had a Velikor with Boysenberry from Monkish. Velikor is a sour blonde. They had boysenberries. No complaints here. And also had Snugglebug. It was a boysenberry and raspberry. Sour from Smog City. And from Blue Falls Brewery in Wisconsin. Had their Hef, which I thought was actually one of the better Hefs I've had in a while. I, for some reason, like not like actively tried to avoid Hefs, but I just ended up avoiding them for a little bit. And yeah, this one was very good. Had it on Sunday night.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. So Dan, kind of finishing out the roster. Big men. What? There's obviously three guys we're going to be looking at more than others. Pascal Chukwu, who is a transfer from Providence. He's not a grad transfer, however, so he redshirted last year. He seems to be the best of the bunch in terms of really getting after boards, but I haven't seen a lot on the offensive end for him. Obviously, the other two are known quantities for SU fans. That's Tyler Roberson and Daywon Coleman. Dan, do you see them just kind of interchanging at the 4 and 5 spots, along with maybe some Lydon in there for smaller lineups, and just playing maybe 25 minutes apiece?
I really like that you refer to Tyler Roberson as a known quantity.
Sure, whatever.
Because he's a guy that we've seen play a lot.
Yeah, that's really all. That's the only thing I can say about him, actually. Your name's Tyler. And I've seen you play a couple times.
I've seen you play a number of games. Occasionally you were amazing, and occasionally I forget you're on the team. Yeah, I think it's an interesting group overall. Roberson obviously is eclectic as hell. When he plays Duke, he stores like 18 points and averages like 14 boards. I don't know that those numbers are accurate, but they're pretty close. And those were just off the top of my head. Like, it's something like that. It's insane.
I'll back them up. I don't care.
I mean, he's so good against Duke, and so who knows? And it's everyone else. If he can somehow focus that anti-Duke energy on the majority of the games in the schedule, like, he's an All-American. But other nights, like, you just don't know what you're getting from him, and his lack of jump shooting is a major issue in terms of, you know, spreading the floor on defense. I think that will probably be a lesser issue this year just because we have more guys you can pair him with to spread the floor, but it makes him tough against certain lineups. And, you know, if you need him to be any kind of focal point of the offense, it's just going to be a dicey proposition. I don't think he's going to be asked to do as much offensively this year as he was last year. So we'll see. I think if he's just a good glue guy and can get you like 8-8 most nights and then occasionally blow up, like, I think Bayham will probably sign for that. I think he, obviously, Lydon, we kind of already talked about. He kind of goes in and out of both groups as he can play on the perimeter, but he also play inside. I'm interested to see how much they use him at the five. Because obviously last year he played there, I'd guess, more than they would want because of the depth issues. He probably doesn't need to play there very much, if at all, this year. But I do think that he was so good there in spots that you almost want to see what happens, like, for 5 minutes a game, just throw him at the five, see what you can do with the five wide sets on offense. And he's good enough on defense, especially with his ability to block shots, where you don't lose too much. You just don't want him to pick up too many fouls. So I am interested to see how much small ball we do with him in there. And then the two big guys, I really want to see what Daywon gives us. He obviously has not been able to put together like a full season due to his injuries. He played all of last year, but, you know, there are some games where he was in and out right away, and that was kind of it. And there were some games where he gave a nice lift. I think if you can get a good 20 minutes a game out of him, 15 to 20 a game, and he can put some points on the board and continues to go up strong with the ball, like, I think he'll take that and use his fouls. And then Chukwu, I think, offensively is going to be a work in progress. But defensively, I mean, he's just such a presence. And like you said, he appears to be one of the better rebounders on the team already, on a team that has a couple of other good ones. Like, I think that first game they struggled to rebound a little bit. But on paper, Lydon, Roberson, Chukwu, and Daywon, and even, you know, you have guys like White and Battle who are pretty big for their positions. Not to even mention Torian Thompson, who is a huge recruit and kind of added late. And I feel like people are forget about, even though he was like such a touted player. There's a lot here. It's just like the backcourt rotations. It's going to be interesting to see how we get all of them in, especially a guy like Thompson, who joined the team probably expecting to play a decent amount. And it might be tough to find minutes for everyone, but I think that's kind of one of the joys of this team.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. I think that, you know, Thompson, I know he said he wants to play. I feel like he is going to play, but I just don't know how. I don't know how much he is going to see the floor, assuming those other three bigs stay healthy. That's not a bad thing. I think I kind of prefer it in terms of depth to have him and Moyer, you know, especially with Thompson. Be nice to have him, a little bit of experience. Moyer coming in fresh to be able to kind of build on that, and a few of these other guys would be great going into the following season. But in the here and now, Thompson's going to be learning on the job a little bit, and it'd be good for him to be able to observe under, you know, guys who have been here for several years, such as Coleman and Roberson. I think Coleman was at 17.5 per game last year. Like you said, he did play every game. I'd like to see him get up to 20, but if he's going to give us 5 and 5 and a block and, you know, just be a presence in the middle, I could deal with a similar kind of line as he had last year. Again, like just a little bit of an uptick. When it comes to Roberson, he did 8.8 and 8.5 last year, and that was in about 31 minutes. I think that, you know, again, we said this about a lot of guys, that was overuse for him. I'd like to see him down to around 25 to 27, and I think he can still probably give us about 10 and 9. That's a pretty good line for what we'll need him for. Even if it ends up being 9 and 10 or 8 and 11, anything like that. Roberson's a pretty solid rebounder. He's great on the offensive boards. And if he can put it together consistently, he could be one of the more dangerous players, you know, in the conference. And again, you know, then going over to Chukwu, I think Chukwu's going to be great on the boards, and that might buy him some more time on the floor. the offense is going to be interesting, and I do kind of look forward to seeing just how much Boeheim will test things around with some of the things you mentioned with Leiden, just in terms of, you know, whether he plays at the five. If he does, it'll be, you know, sparingly. I mean, I'd prefer he doesn't really get banged around too much in the paint, but especially when we have, you know, at least three, if not four other bigs, you know, take that kind of pounding with more weight on their shoulders. But alas, I think we're well set there from a body standpoint, probably better than we have been in a few years, which is a relief.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what rotations they put Chukwu in with. I almost think he might end up playing more with like the Leiden, the shooter group, because he appears to move really well for his size, and you might not lose a lot in transition with him. You might even get like some chase down blocks, some easy dunks on the other end. So I'm interested to see what groupings that Boeheim is most comfortable with him in, because as we've seen with like some of the better shot blockers, Fab Melo, Christmas in past years, like there have been times where Boeheim's been very cool leaving them on an island, and it's worked out to some interesting transition opportunities. So it'd be interesting to see if they try to use Chukwu in that same way.
I would agree. All right, moving on to the greater ACC. I think we can agree that Duke is projected number one, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, they're definitely projected. I think they are warranted as well, as long as they stay healthy, which is a bigger question.
That always seems to be, and it sucks too, because I feel like, you know, Duke has really put together some great talent. I know you and I talked about this 2 years ago during the Final Four, that Coach K really found a way to kind of merge the best of his own styles and Calipari styles to better results. I think Duke's going to be a fun watch this year in a lot of ways. Hopefully a much better defense than they had last year. I think that was one of their biggest Achilles heels, was just the fact that they couldn't play defense to the same level that we've seen in the past. Not that it was ever a calling card at Duke, but I did always feel like it was something that they could do well. But then beyond them, I think it's kind of a muddled group. I think Carolina is your next most talented. And then after that, I don't buy into Virginia as a clear-cut number three. And you might agree. I think Louisville and Syracuse might be a little interchangeable at four, but I'm fine to take SU at full five for now. But yeah, I think that's your top five. And then after that, I think that all hell breaks kind of loose.
Yeah, Virginia is interesting. I think London Parente is a very good player. I've already heard like the "how is he still in college" stuff with him, but he's just such a steady presence, and obviously he was a pretty lights out 3-point shooter. I know he had a couple huge games against us last year. It's just a matter of like, do they keep on replacing? Like they lost Harris a couple years ago, they lost Brogdon last year, and it's tough to see. You know, are they going to be able to kind of replenish that talent, because they had such a good, you know, solid group for two to three seasons that kind of built this program into what it is. But Prentice is still there, and that is a lot more than a lot of teams have when you have a point guard presence like that. So they're good. I don't know that they're going to be the number three team. I think we definitely, the top five, it seems like pretty, it's hard to really argue. I know a lot of people, some people have Syracuse lower. But
CBS seemed to be lower almost across the board on us for some reason than like any other publication I'd seen.
Yeah, not really sure why. Some people are really high on NC State.
Which, I know. Sure, whatever.
Yeah, I feel like this every year. Like, oh, NC State's really talented. It's like, yeah, well, eventually they might get there.
People say the same thing about NC State football too, actually. It's really funny how that works.
Yeah, I think NC State basketball is like, I feel like they end up like, coming to the same like place versus their expectations. I think football is like a run or two lower, just based on like what they are talent wise. Like NC State basketball is a ton of talent, but like I don't know that they're trying to be like the third or fourth best team in this conference, and they haven't really proven it yet. They get like, I feel like they have like a couple big wins every year, but then, you know, they fall apart in the middle of the schedule, or they just don't live up.
Well, like what has Gottfried really proven as a coach that he? I mean, other than that like one tournament run where they went like around further than they were supposed to, I am very curious like why people are so willing to buy in hard on him when he has not really, like, he's had talent on his roster and he hasn't done a ton with it. So I'm just curious like what the sell is, and whether he's even one of the top, even in the top half. of coaches in the ACC right now, given how deep this league is with coaching talent.
Yeah, I mean, it's just deep overall. This year, it's kind of filthy. Like, when you have Notre Dame conceivably in, like, the bottom third of this league, and Pitt, too. Like, Pitt brings back most of its team from last year, which wasn't a great team, but it was a team that could beat most people. And you have them sitting, looking at CBS, three of the four guys have them at 12. Like, that's nuts. And it might, like, and I remember seeing that and being like, that's crazy. And then I'm like, maybe. Like, they could be 12. And they could be 12, and they could also be a tournament team. Probably not at 12, but... like
at 11,
it's not crazy to think that this league gets 11 in. Like, it's, you know, someone will probably fall off. Like, either Clemson can't put anything around Blossom game, or Notre Dame just falls apart, you know, because they've had a couple really good years, or Vatek doesn't, is like a year away. Like, odds are one of these teams that is getting promoted pretty high doesn't end up living up. But I find it hard to think that, like, this team gets less than, like, 9 in. Like, it's really deep.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking down the list, and
then there's the last. Then there's the last three, but we don't need to spend too much time on them. Shout out to our rivals at Boston College.
Yeah, I mean, BC is not a real team, but, like, Wake and Georgia Tech are actually going to be, like, interesting to watch. Like, Wake is getting better, and Danny Manning's making that group better. We're just not seeing the wins necessarily coincide just yet. Georgia Tech actually is better. They went 19-14 last year.
Yeah, and they have a new coach. That coach is maybe not great, but he's new.
Yeah, new can sometimes be good. Like, I mean, you look at Pitt, new is probably not good, especially considering that their old coach seemed to have an odd control over Syracuse's zone, and I don't think that'll be the case this year.
I can't wait to not have to face Jimmy Dinson ever again.
Yeah, like ever again, and I'm really glad that TCU overpaid to get him a hometown discount that wasn't a hometown discount at all. So Dan, looking up and down this list, sure tournament teams for me: UNC, Virginia, Louisville, Duke, and Syracuse. I'd say surefire in. After that, I'd say Virginia Tech, Miami, Florida State, Clemson are probable in. And then you could, I guess, NC State.
NC State's probably a tournament team. I just don't know if they're going to be, like, a great team, but I think they're probably at least a tournament team.
Fair.
Unless something goes wrong.
That was him trolling. So, yeah. So you've got five definite ins. You've got five probable ins. I'm adding NC State to that list. So then that leaves four at the bottom. You can get rid of Boston College. So Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, Pitt, and Notre Dame. You could convince me of two of those teams getting in potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think any from that group could get in. It won't be all just because, like, the league will beat itself up too much. And they're not going to put, you know, they're not going to put 13 teams from the ACC in. Like, it's not never going to happen. But I think 11 is probably on the upper end. And it might just be a case of, like, the bottom couple teams beat each other up during the year and ends up, like, you know, one or two of those teams might both be good enough to be in, and they can only put one in. So I think this is probably the deepest we've seen the ACC since we joined. It's right up there with how deep the Big East would be on a year-to-year basis.
I think this
it probably is.
I think this group's deeper at the top and all the way through. I mean, yes, it has, like, Boston College subs in the noted DePaul role, but other than that,
now starring as DePaul, Boston College.
Although, wasn't DePaul one of the 11 teams that year?
Were they? Was that, like, that weird year where they finally, like, when figured, like, Cleveland Melvin was, like, a seventh year senior, and they're like, we're gonna get. I don't even know if he actually ever made it to the tournament.
Maybe not.
I don't think they were one of the 11 that year, honestly.
They might not have been. Seton Hall was, I believe. Like, I know
Seton Hall was. Seton Hall, every, like, every 4 years, Seton Hall would, like, have three seniors, and they'd be like, okay, we're going, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that they're deeper because I always thought that, like, that Big East maybe had, like, two teams that were, like, one seed quality, then had a lot of teams that were in that, like, 8 to 10 seed range. This group, on the other hand, I feel like there's four or five teams that could easily be one or two seeds. They won't be, obviously, but they're all caliber-wise good enough to be. And I think that the other five teams after them are all, you know, you could easily convince me that they're somewhere in that 4 to 7 range. Like, that Big East didn't have this.
I love, by the way, that we've, in, like, three or four short years have turned into, like, the worst types of, like, ACC elitist people. Because, like, we were so not that for a long time, and then we're like, well, we're here now, so yeah, we're just as good as they've always said.
but we were Big East elitist people, so it was fine.
That's true. We just took it. It ported right over. It was like a very seamless transition. But I really don't think we're being like too crazy about it. I think this league is that good.
No, yeah. I mean, Jim Boeheim's not one to compliment the ACC much. If he says it's the greatest league ever assembled, and he's pretty much said as much, this is the greatest league ever assembled. That's fine with me. Again, you look at the talent here. You look at a team like Virginia Tech that is at best a fringe tournament team, and they have a guy like Buzz Williams who's been in the tournament. He's done that. He knows how to coach the Hokies pretty close with us, among other teams. And again, a guy like Mike Bray, who, while he's never made the Final Four, has gotten Notre Dame very far in the tournament multiple times. And he could finish as far down as 12th. Again, there's just so much talent here that I'm hoping that top five, including us, can stay as is and stay above the fray. But we're probably looking at something like last year where best team in the conference has three or four losses in league play.
Yeah, it's going to be a grueling year, but I think the nice thing about being in the ACC and having so much attention paid is that you're not really hurting for, respect from the intelligentsia of college basketball. Like, people know exactly how good the ACC is. I'm sure other leagues are going to be so tired of hearing it by midseason, but it's going to be hard to, like, really get left out if you are a legitimate team. If you're fighting for like the 12th or the 11th ACC bid for the tournament, then like there's only so much of a gripe that you can have if you get left out.
Right.
But if you're in like the top 9 or 10, like you should feel pretty good because that means you probably can compete with most teams in like outside of the top 10 in college basketball on most nights.
Yeah, which go you.
good for you.
Yeah. One thing I'd be very curious to find out, like, and there's no way to really run this study easily, is like, I feel like because of the ESPN machine that gets behind the ACC, because of how much Billis talks about them, because of how much Vitale talks about them, that any non-ACC affiliated fan, I would almost guarantee, would know more about what's going on in the ACC than any other league. And I mean, especially the Big East, which is relegated to Fox Sports territory. I'd be shocked if not casual fans, but fans on a similar or slightly lower level than us, but in a different conference, knew more about any other league than the ACC because of the exposure factor.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably right. I just feel like it's going to be, I think after this year, with how good this league should be, I can't imagine, like, I think you're gonna finally convert some of these like holdouts in terms of, we should still be in the Big East. Like this league is stacked, and this is what you want if you are a premier program. And you know, if Syracuse wants to be like that top 10 program that it yearns to be, you know, you want to be playing competitively with Duke, UNC, Louisville, and they'll have the chance this year. I'm incredibly excited about it, and I think that we are in for a very different and very fun Syracuse basketball experience.
Yeah. All right, everyone's favorite audio segment. Let's go through games that you don't have a schedule in front of you, listener, and let's just say what we're winning and losing. This is how Dan and I started this stupid podcast years ago.
It's just as good. The radio remains great.
Agreed. All right, leading us off, Friday, Colgate. That's win. A win. Holy Cross.
Win.
Monmouth.
I'll say win, but Monmouth is not like they're.
Didn't they lose a senior?
Probably. I don't know. Did they lose the bench guys? Like, that's the most important thing. It's a win. They're going to be Monmouth at the Dome. I don't have any doubt.
Yeah, I don't really have any doubts on this one. South Carolina State.
Win.
Okay, so that's 4-0 for both of us.
Yes.
Noted bubble team with a garbage schedule, South Carolina from last year, down at Barclays.
We're not winning that one.
Yeah, I agree. Didn't they lose someone too?
Yeah, they're an interesting team. I think we beat them. They have a couple decent guys though. I think they're like a, I don't know if they're a tournament team, but they're going to be like one of those teams in the SEC that's like middle of the pack and like you have some discussions about.
Oh, so like everybody but Kentucky.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
because the entire SEC is garbage except for Kentucky. which cool. Yeah. Congrats.
They'll fight for like 18, 19 wins.
Yeah. Which that's great. That's our like worst season ever. Cool.
We're the worst.
Yeah, I'm that guy now. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was like basically, so it was like when we had Just for Team Christmas and no one else. Yeah, that's pretty much what we did.
We reached the summit.
We beat Notre Dame and they went to a Final Four. Yeah. Or a Elite Eight and cool. Almost beat Kentucky. We beat them that year with just Rack, pretty much.
All right. So collective 5-0. At Wisconsin. I think how you feel about this game really depends on if you buy Wisconsin. I do buy Wisconsin. I think Nigel Hayes
is
going to kill the zone because I don't think it's going to be completely like coalesced yet. I've got Wisconsin beating us yet again. I think it's going to be further. I think the distance between the teams is going to be further than last year, though.
You mean you think it's going to be like more of a blowout?
I mean, it wasn't really a blowout last year. Like, it was a game that got away from us at the end. I think we're looking at a 10-12 point loss.
I'm going to say it's going to be closer than that. I think we're probably more talented than Wisconsin, but Wisconsin, like, this, it's a very veteran team. You have Kanad, you have Hayes. Like, they've both been there forever. They know how to play. And they really found themselves under Greg Gerard last year. It took them a little while. They were pretty bad after they beat us, and then they had the whole thing with Bo Ryan, which was ugly. I think they're going to be really good. The Kroll Center is awful to play at, but I think Syracuse is good enough to hang in. I think it's going to be like a 4 or 5 point loss.
All right. I can deal with that. At the end of the day, the tournament committee doesn't really care, you know, how many points you lose by. It's just that you lost to a quality team. And thank you, Wisconsin, for turning shit around last year, because I would argue that is one of the top three reasons why we ended up making the tournament after all.
Certainly didn't hurt.
Nope. North Florida. That's obviously a win, even though they are the Atlantic Sun favorite right now.
Yeah, they're scrappy. They like battle out Dunn City every year, pretty much.
Why did we schedule this team?
I don't know. I mean, they're like an RPI like 100 to 150, so it won't be like the worst thing when we beat them.
Oh, actually, I did know why we scheduled this team. It was in that scheduling article that Donna wrote.
What was it?
It was like somebody like knew somebody on the training staff, and they were looking for a game. We were looking for a game, and
okay, that works.
Yeah, but like I don't love. I mean, but like thinking about them now, I don't love that game between Wisconsin and Connecticut.
It's iffy. I could see this one being like an annoying game throughout, and then we end up winning by like 16. Because
like
we
the stupid get, like, Detroit game.
Right, like it looks way like you look back, you're like, we handled that team, but then you're like, wait, that game was way close. Like,
wait, yeah. We won by 6. What the hell happened?
Yeah, we'll win that one, but they're a decent team, and it'll actually probably help our numbers when we beat them.
That's fine. Okay, this is the second big matchup of the non-conference schedule versus UConn, who is probably going to be in the top 20 or so. I got us winning this one. That's mostly based on being a homer, not necessarily diving into the matchup itself.
Yeah, I think we're going to win it, too. UConn's good. I just think our guys did up for this one. I think Boeheim will get them ready to go, and MSG is obviously it's going to be – I'm excited for that one. It's Monday night, but hopefully it's a pretty packed crowd. Usually UConn, Syracuse is pretty electric there. I look forward to being there. I think we'll win it, but it should be a really good one. I'm excited for that. I'm way into playing UConn every year. Obviously, we have them next year. We had them last year. Just did them on the schedule every year. Football, I'd have no use for them. No. Basketball, play them every year. It's just such a good rivalry, as is one of the ones coming up a couple after this.
Yeah, although to be honest, I'd be fine with moving Connecticut into the St. John slot. That's fine with me.
I wouldn't mind that if we MSG mean
every
like
year.
Taking.
Yeah,
like you mean taking out St. John's?
Taking out St. John's. It's taking out St. John's for UConn. Just playing UConn at MSG every year.
Sure, and if St. John's wants to play every once in a while, I'm fine. I honestly, I have no use for St. John's coming to the Dome.
No. There's not like they bring any fans with them.
Yeah, if we want to even do like a rotation thing where like we play St. John, we guarantee ourselves either a UConn or a St. John's game at the Darden, and then occasionally we play UConn at the Dome or at Gamble. I don't want to play at XL Center. Can we just not? I know they will. If we play UConn on the road, it's going to be at XL. Ugh. Gamble is such a better environment. Like, I've been to probably 3 or 4 UConn-Syracuse games, like... And including the last one at Gamble, like the last year Syracuse is in the Big East, that was an awesome environment. Syracuse won. We went to their bars afterwards, and all their fans were really depressed and stopped making all the Bernie Fine jokes, which was nice. Didn't have anything thrown at us after the game. Before the game, we did. No, but Gamble, like, just totally different. Like, being on campus is so much nicer. At Cell Center sucks. Like, that place is terrible. So, yes. But overall, like, UConn, Syracuse, and MSG works every time. Like, if you want to just play every game, that's fine.
Agreed, agreed. Boston University, the battle of schools John chose between when he was going to college.
I know nothing about BU basketball. I assume we will win.
Same. Georgetown.
Win. I don't think Georgetown's going to be that good. And we need revenge game. We need to win this one.
Yeah, I'm kind of sick and tired of losing to this trash team.
yes.
Unequivocally. Eastern Michigan, battle of the 2-3 zone. Who you got?
Syracuse. Shout out to Rob Murphy.
Yeah, EMU's getting better. Still not good enough, but
also
better.
Can we say bowl eligible football program, Eastern Michigan?
Way to go, Eagles.
Yes, a team that may still not exist in a couple of years, but right now they're going bowling. So good for them. Get that bowl money. Get your weird gray field. We sod it or whatever. And yeah, keep go Emus.
Yeah. St. John's. So, you know, your standard 250 to 300 RPI trash opponent.
Can we please beat them?
Last year was just shit. I don't even want to talk
about
it.
Oh, that was the worst. Oh,
it was just so dumb. And, like, just the timing of it was dumb. Like, all of it was just so stupid.
It was awful. Please, for the love of God, beat them.
Yeah. And Cornell, a win.
Yeah, Cornell's a win.
So that takes us to the new year at 12-1 on both of our independent ballots here.
Yep.
Moving on to another 250 to 300 RPI team, Boston College.
Yeah, I think we're going to beat them. Unfortunately, they and St. John's will drag us down, but we will beat them.
That's fine. First real test of the conference season, obviously, it's on the second game, Miami, who could be a fringe top 25 team.
I'm going to give Miami the win. They play us really tough. I think this team will still be kind of coalescing. Larrañaga's a great coach, and they know how to drag us into the mud a little bit, and they play that zone that can be tricky sometimes. I think this will be a better team against the zone, but we won't probably see that many. We'll see Eastern Michigan, and I don't know who else in the zone us before that. So I'm going to say Miami wins this one.
I'm going with Syracuse. It's a home game. If we were on the road, I'd be tempted to go with the U, but I'm going with Syracuse. January 7th versus Pittsburgh at home, the first Jamie Dixon-less Pittsburgh game in quite a while.
I'm going to say Syracuse wins this one big. I say we're just going to exercise all the Pitt demons Jamie Dixon and Ben Howland there. Just like, Boeheim's just going to be like, screw it. We are running it up. Don't care. Please. That would maybe be my favorite game of the year if we beat Pitt by like 25.
Love it.
I don't know that we're going to beat him by 25, but I think we win that one.
Yeah, that's fine. At Virginia Tech, I've got this as the first conference loss.
I'm going to take a win, but I think it's going to be excruciating. I think it's going to be like every other, like, was last year the Virginia Tech game that like went down the last second and it was some chicanery?
Yes.
Or was that 2 years ago?
I think I forget.
It was. Buzz is
I hate
you know
Buzz.
I know
I hate him so much.
I have a weird thing with Buzz. Like off the court, I think he's awesome. Like I just remember the pregame before they beat us in the NCAA tournament when he's at Marquette, which was awful. He had like a really cool like basically explainer of his whole career, and he's really cool off the court. On the court, he is the worst. And literally on the court, I mean, like he's on the court all the time. I can't stand it. But he's a really good coach. He knows how to coach in Syracuse. I'm not. I'll give Syracuse the win. I think they'll be talented enough. But man, I think it's gonna be like 1 or 2 points.
Yeah. We get to double dip on Cupcake Boston College on the 14th.
Stop ruining our RPI.
Yeah. Get off the schedule. BC Syracuse is not a thing in basketball. It never has been. This is dumb. I'll take a win at North Carolina. That's a loss.
Yeah, I'm tempted to say this is like the coming out party for the team, but at UNC is tough. I think they'll hang. I think they'll hang with UNC as they have done the last couple of years. But UNC on the road on
Big
Monday.
After, yeah, 2 days after another game.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough spot. I'm tempted to take the win, but I'm going to go with a loss. I'll play it safe.
Yeah. At Notre Dame, keeping in mind that this is not going to be the pesky, well, as pesky of a Notre Dame team as we normally see.
It is at the Joyce Center, which scares me. I'm going to take the win. We'll have a couple days off. This is probably the worst Notre Dame team in a while. As you'd expect, you know, when they've been really good for two or three years, you eventually run out of players there. But I'll take the win, and this is another, like, getting a win at the road on the road in Notre Dame is always pretty good. So I think we'll take that one.
Same here. Versus Wake Forest. Wake's played is oddly tough, but more at home than on the road at the Dome. So I'm taking SU going away here.
Yeah, I think we'll win this one. Wake is, I don't know, Wake's in a weird spot in terms of, like, where they are. I think they are getting better, but I think the improvements have been probably slower than they expected. So I think Syracuse wins this one fairly comfortably. Solid teens win here.
Agreed. Florida State, fringe top 25 team, Florida State, home game, going with a win. I just think that SU's got the size to match up with them if needed. I also think they have the speed on the perimeter to match up with them if they need as well.
Yeah, FSU's good. I like this one at the Dome. If this was on the road, I'd feel maybe a little worse about it. Noon game kind of scares me. I'll also be at this game. It is a nooner. I plan to be at this game. This is probably my trip up this year. So I'll give myself the win because it'll be kind of depressing if we lose. But I think it'll be a tough, ugly nooner. Florida State, you know, can tend to play that way. And they are talented, but I'll give Syracuse the win here.
All right. At NC State, I was really torn on this one.
This is tough. It's at the PNC Arena where we've, like, I feel like half the time we play really well there and then half the time we, like, struggle. And NC State's been a weird team for us. As much as we just, like, shit on them 20 minutes ago. I'm going to take the win. I'm going to take the win. This is all I mean, we haven't played a team yet, so who knows. But I'll take the win here.
I'll cave. I'll go with the win.
Okay.
Versus Virginia. This is going to be a potential game day spot.
I'm taking the win here. I think it'll be, like you said, potential game day spot.
But a
nooner.
Don't
love the nooner, but I think if Virginia is in, like, the top four and they're battling for ACC position, like, I could see the crowd just being really ridiculous for this one. So I'm taking Syracuse.
Agreed. At Clemson, this has let down all over it.
Yeah, we've lost that Little John recently, right? We lost there a couple years ago.
We lose there quite a bit, actually. We actually don't beat Clemson that often in basketball either, for some stupid reason.
which really makes it tough. Like, we really need to start beating Clemson in basketball so we at least have something.
Right.
Like, Florida State, they beat us, like, last year, but, like, Florida State, we kind of generally have the basketball football thing figured out. Like, they beat us one time, but whatever. They're better at basketball than we've been at football recently. So I'll take that. Clemson, we need to start beating consistently in basketball. Get out of here. Okay. But I'm going to take Clemson in this one. They have good play. I mean, they have obviously Blossom Dame, who's awesome, who will be probably won't win ACC Player of the Year, but will be in that discussion behind Grayson Allen and all the other Duke players. I think that'll just be a really tough environment. Tuesday night, 8 p.m., you know, a fairly quick turnaround from the Virginia game.
At Pitt.
I'm going to say Syracuse wins. I'm going to take the season sweep it into Pitt, which might be a folly, but I'm going to do it.
I'm going for loss number, that's four in conference for me.
I think I have four overall with the Wisconsin game earlier.
Yeah, I have four and I have five overall now.
I have Clemson, I have North Carolina, I have Miami. Yeah. So I'm one game better than you. I'm just a little less disloyal than you, Joe.
Fair enough. Which, I mean, it's not really that hard to be less disloyal. versus Louisville, I think we get right back on track here. We always seem to play the Cardinals around Valentine's Day. I don't know why. But, yeah, I think we beat Louisville in a game that doesn't really create any separation between the two teams, especially when we have another game coming up 2 weeks later. But it's a nice way for SU to get back on track, and we get to sandwich two shitty losses with two really big home wins.
I'm actually going to take the loss in this one. I'm going to say the quick turnaround, Louisville giving us problems, first matchup with them. Obviously, just kind of all the Patino juju that happens whenever we play them. I'm going to take Louisville on that one. So that puts me at five losses. We're tied.
All right. At Georgia Tech, we get 6 days of rest. We're going to take it to the Yellow Jackets. I'm not worried about this one.
Yep, I'm going to take the win.
Versus Duke. This one is going to be at the Dome.
Yep.
I am projecting a Syracuse loss, but this is going to be a fun one either way. And at that point, like, you know, facing Duke is obviously only going to help the strength of schedule. I think it's going to help for tournament experience. I think we're going to be able to battle a team that well, and that's going to start, you know, growing some postseason hype for SU if any of it had waned at that point.
I'm going straight homer pick, 2-point win at the Dome.
Ooh, boy.
People freak out, fans go nuts. Syracuse becomes like, oh, maybe they're, you know, going to be a top 3 or 4 seed. Actually, at this point, with 5 losses, they'd probably be in the discussion already. But I think this will be like the signature win down the stretch here. You're playing a very freshman-laden team that has not faced a zone. Syracuse beat them last year in Cameron with a much worse team. I just think that this, I for whatever reason, feel really, really good about this one.
All right.
I think if we're going to have that big upset against maybe number one Duke, not a bad spot.
That's fair. And then the letdown spot, potentially, at Louisville. We do not play well at the Yum Center. I'm giving us the loss here. I got two-game losing streaks in here. I don't know why, just kind of how the schedule worked out.
I'm going to hit the win. I gave us a loss at the Dome. I think this will be like that weird reverse split we had in with the Michael Carter-Williams team where they lost at the Dome, and then they had the huge one at the Yum Center.
Absolutely.
I'm going to take this one. I think we'll go with the nice winning streak to end the year. Spoiler alert, I think we're going to beat Georgia Tech twice.
Yeah, we're definitely beating Georgia Tech in that last game, a game that no one but us are going to watch. Because it's probably going to end up on ACC Network or just whatever digital network. I know they stopped like putting games on Digital Extra. I don't know if that was just because since teams were facing one another, there was no reason to toss the inventory to a digital-only option. But in any case, yep, I'm going with Syracuse over Georgia Tech, which puts me at 24-7 regular season, going 12-6 in conference.
I think I have the exact same thing as you, just different games.
That's fair.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm ahead. I'm 25-6. I don't have the Duke loss.
All right.
25-6 and 13-5.
Okay.
So that should be good for like third in the league, I think, yeah, probably.
Third, fourth in the league.
Third or fourth. Yep.
So
probably a 2 or 3 seed, depending on what happens in the tournament.
Like it. So I guess quick, Dan, because I know we're kind of running over on time. How do we do in the ACC tournament, and how do we do in the NCAAs?
I think we'll actually finally make a run on the ACCs. I think we'll go to the semis. Obviously, the ACC tournament
is. We haven't won a game in the ACCs yet.
You're right. We should do that.
Should
I think we're going to go to the semis. I think we'll go to the semis and lose to Duke, because I don't think we'll find them again, and we'll lose a probably not a great game. I think it'll kind of be ugly. Then
it is in New York, though.
It is in New York at the Barclays Center. I'm going to stick with it. I don't want to be. I'm not going to say we're going to beat Duke twice. And then I'm going to take this team. I don't think we're going to go back to the Final Four. That seems a little aggressive. They certainly could. It seems a little aggressive. I'm going to say they go to the Elite Eight. I think two really nice deep tournament runs in a row.
Nice. Yeah, I'm going to say same as you. I think we lose to North Carolina in the ACC tournament. And I think that we get to the Elite Eight. As we all know, the tournament can be a crapshoot, and sometimes you get the matchups you want, and you do poorly. Sometimes you get the matchups you don't want and you do well. See last
year. Like last year.
Yeah. Where everything, all the numbers said that we wanted to face Iowa State, then Gonzaga, then Virginia. We ended up facing not Iowa State at all and ended up having to face Gonzaga and then Virginia in successive rounds. And obviously ended up being able to beat them anyway. These things happen. I guess in the Elite Eight, I think that's not anything to be ashamed of, to be one of the top 8 teams in the country. I think this time there won't be any Cinderella story to it. We'll actually be considered a team that lived up and met the expectations set forth for it. That's fine with me. You can't make the Final Four every year unless you are Duke or Kentucky or North Carolina or really not even those teams, because they've all managed to fall short of expectations recently as well.
Yeah. I think we'd all. I think. I mean, with the season we're projecting, maybe there'll be a little disappointment. But it's hard once you get past the Sweet 16. I feel like unless you're
Final Four,
unless it's like one of those clear teams or like a clear number one seed team like that, it's hard to get too disappointed by an Elite Eight run.
Agreed. All right, Dan, this was fun. We for those listening, we have a football podcast tomorrow. We decided this is the season preview episode. We wanted to give it a full allotment of time, and we definitely delivered on that.
Yes, and we did not want to record a 2.5 hour podcast. So,
which I'm sure
instead you'll get. Yeah, instead you get to us twice this week. So have fun with that. I'm sure you'll all appreciate it.
Yeah, tomorrow's is going to be Tulane talk. So you know, this is the one to listen to.
For sure.
So Dan, thanks for joining. Much appreciated.
Yes, looking forward to talking to you incredibly soon.
Yes, very much. Everyone, thank you for joining us on Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on whatever Android store you might find it on. And go Orange.
Go Orange.